Ready for one last domain?
All right.
Let's go ahead and get this started on there. Domain 8, software development security. I also do want to apologize for getting a little upset. I get so passionate about getting you to pass that when I'm not doing a good job of explaining it, I get frustrated and mad at myself because I want you all to pass. Trust me. You can go in and call up my wife and kids. When I get that phone call from you that says you passed the exam, I'm in a good mood, right? I'm in a happy mood. Things are good because I want each one of you. To me, it's not about 80% of you passing. It's about every single one of you passing. So I just really, really want to make sure we're getting down that information. And one of the things on day one, if you remember when we started off the class, I said the areas you have the most experience are going to be the hardest domains. Most people think the areas you have the most experience, you're going to have the easiest. It's the hardest time because you have a different viewpoint of that and sort of exactly what you said, what George, Randy going, but that's not how I would do it. Exactly. Right? But the ISC square world is a different world and we just have to accept the way that is. So domain 8, our software development security. This one is another one of those domains, pretty unscathed. They changed the name, but this was always one. It used to be project management and application development, used to be the name of the domain, and now they call it software development security, but it's basically covering the different development life cycles, like waterfall model, spiral model, agile, extreme programming. Going in and understanding the general methods of software development lifecycle and then some of the different security testing mechanisms you would deploy. So as we've talked about several times this week, security is most important. Let me try a third time. Security is best when it's implemented throughout the entire process. From the initial beginning through the entire process. Remember, I want my security to be the flower in the cake, not the icing on the cake. And what I'm referring to is the flour is the first thing you put in the bowl. And once the cake is made, you can't even identify the flour, let alone remove the flour. Icing is one of the last things that you put on the cake, and it can be removed without impacting the rest of the cake. So we want our security to be baked in through the entire process, involved in every area, remembering, always assessing the risk of disclosure, alteration, or destruction, so making sure we address confidentiality, integrity, and availability at the level that is acceptable for your organization. Now, one of the ways that we go about assessing and looking at an organization is creating capability maturity models. These are developed by Carnegie Mellon University, and they're used to look for indicators of maturity of an organization. So you might have heard companies say, we are a CMM level 3, or we are a CMM level 5. That's referring to the maturity level, which indicates different characteristics that would apply to mature software and program development. So when you look at the CMMI, there's basically 5 levels of maturity. Level 1 is initial. You're all level 1. So there's no such thing as level 0. Every organization by default is at a level 1. But before you get excited, read level 1 initial. Initial 1 is basically ad hoc, chaotic processes that are typically going in, and you succeed based on the heroics of a few individuals. A basic indicator of a level 1 organization is when you're getting close to a project need to be complete, people work 20 hours, sleep in the office, work 7 days a week, and the project gets done. That's ad hoc chaotic. That's level 1 initial. Because if you had proper, formal, verifiable processes, you would have planned out the schedule correctly, and people would not have had to work 20-hour days, 7 days a week. So organizations, or if you get questions on the exam where it said in order to finish a project, five people slept in the office for 12 days, right? That is level one initial, right? That is sort of the ad hoc, and based on individual heroics, things do get done. Level two is managed. This is where you start having some basic project management where you can start to track cost, schedule, and functionality. So with level two, at least you're having some processes to start tracking the cost against schedule, against functionality. Then level three is defined. This is where you go in and you have formal documentation, and you can go in and now start defining and planning out projects. You can actually go in and start to expect what the outcome is going to be. Then level four is quantitatively managed. This is where you go in and you can actually measure. You have metrics for the processes. You can start to measure and make sure that quality is being done correctly. So if you have metrics to measuring the overall quality, that's at a level four. And then a level five is optimization, where you basically have continuous process improvement and feedback loops where you're continually improving, optimizing, and making adjustments to increase the quality against the metric that was defined within level four. So level one, initial ad hoc. Level two, manage basic project management. Level three, you can start having defined management plans and have predictable outcome. Level four is measurable metrics. And level five is optimization. Those are sort of the key discriminators you'll go ahead and look for. You also go in and your capability maturity model integration focused really on the quality management practices. You also have your SDLC, which is your software development lifecycle. Don't be thrown. ISC squared on the exam also calls it systems development lifecycle. So if you see software development or systems development lifecycle, they're referring to the same thing. This is one of those that makes me crazy, but I'm going to tell you so you don't get caught up by it. So if you're seeing one question software, one question system development, they are referring to the same thing. And these are methods for producing robust, high-quality software. So when we look at our different development methodologies, we're going to go through some of the top ones. Some are fairly older methodologies, like our waterfall and spiral. Some of you that might have worked on large government projects in the late 80s, early 90s, definitely familiar with those. And then we have some of the new agile, scrum, and extreme programming methodologies that we're also going to be covering and knowing for the exam. And yes, it is a miracle, because for the last 17 years, ISC Squared had 20 slides on object-oriented programming and every possible angle that you would ever want to know. Maybe in the 90s I could see that, but in 2011 it was painful of going through the level of detail, and in this update they did remove all of that object-oriented craziness. So the fact that you don't have 20 slides, you should be thankful. You have no idea how awesome a gift that is from ISC Squared. So the waterfall model was developed for large-scale projects, and the idea is that you would have phases, and there would be key control gates between each phase of the project, and you would move from one phase to the next, but there wasn't any going back. Once you made a decision, you kept going, and other than the customer being involved in those control gates, where they would approve at a control gate, they weren't actively involved in the decision, designs, or other components. You would basically go off, work. You'd meet with the customer and have a critical design review. They'd approve it. Then you go back, work. You'd have another review. They'd approve it. So there's a control gate, but other than that, there was minimal customer involvement. So this is basically your waterfall model, where you'll notice each stage there is a triangle, which is a key milestone that the customer would have to sign off on for you to proceed to the next section. So you would do a system design review and then a system specification, a preliminary critical design review. What was the problem with waterfall? Is you would go off for 2 or 3 years, spend hundreds of millions of dollars, and you would come back, and the customer would basically say, "What's that?" And you'd be like, "That's what you asked for." And they're like, "No, it's not." But with extreme programming, you're doing three things. You're having the customer part of the development team. So everything you do, the customer representative is there. Second, you go in and you come up with what is the simplest thing that would have value to the customer. So what is the thing that we can do in the quickest period of time that would have value to them? It might be a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And then we do pair programming where the programmers work together and test and develop on the fly and produce that and get that back into the customer's hands. Then they provide feedback. We figure out what the next simplest thing is, and then we move on to the next prototype. So those are sort of the two different implementations of how we can implement Agile. Let's go ahead and take our final afternoon break. We are one of the few classes left because we are that cool. So hopefully we can do it in 10 minutes so we can optimize our time, get back, and be able to get this knocked out. So 10-minute break, and then let's come back. All right, let's get started again. Got a little more to cover, and I want to make sure we got plenty of daylight to do it. So got a little more sailing to do to get that boat into the dock. So we talked about some of the different development methodologies. There are tools that can go in and help you. A case tool is a computer-aided software engineering tool, and basically this will go in and automatically write portions of code for you. Where you see case tools a lot are in GUI development. When I'm building out a graphical user interface, when I go in and I have a text box and I have a push button, there is some generic code that's going to occur that's needed that says when I press a button, what to do. And then if I drag a relationship between the text box and the push button, that's automatic in terms of the process and it has to occur. So what the case tool will do is as I'm dropping different radio buttons and push buttons and all that, it's putting portions of the code automatic. So now when I get done, 60% of the code is written and I just have to customize it for the unique needs. So case tools will automatically add code based on the functionality of the GUI components. You also have IDEs, which is an integrated development environment. It basically is a workspace for you to go in and write code, develop, debug, and test. Anyone, if you remember, the Borland C++, right, IDEs back in the 80s and 90s, they were very basic, but they were basically integrated development environments where you wrote, test, debug code. Examples of these are Visual Studio or Eclipse, are popular ones where you can manage, control, test, and verify your code. Now, one of the things that's sort of been one of the new hot areas is applications can't be written in a vacuum. They can't just be written independently. You always have to understand how is it going to work operational. So one of those new areas is called DevOps. And DevOps is basically development and operations, and the goal is to try to go in and consider the operational environment when you are developing code. So now instead of just writing one big piece of code, what DevOps would say is, okay, this portion of the code is going to be deployed in a cloud. This portion of the code is going to be running on a server. And this portion of a code is going to be running on a client. So now when the developer writes it, they're going to write it slightly differently based on the operational restraints and requirements in which it's deployed. So what you're really doing with DevOps is you're actually figuring out how the deployment strategy is going to go before you start writing code, and then the coding aligns with that operational environment, which, as you can imagine, would save and cut down on a lot of frustration. Because if your developers just go in and write code independently and they don't understand the operational environment, there's going to have to be a lot of rewrite that occurs and happens after the fact. Then when we look at our security development lifecycle, the goal is to make sure that we are integrating security in to all of our different models. And really, what are we trying to do here? Ideally, which I know is hard to achieve, but ideally what we're trying to do is create optimal, functional, rich code with minimal security vulnerabilities. We're trying to go in and break the trend that used to be functional or security, pick one. It turns out that in a lot of cases, security can align with functionality. And here's how you do it. Instead of going in and building a program and then adding all this extra security, what if security is involved in decisions? So for example, I'm going in and I'm creating this variable and it's going to have 20 different components. But I push back and say, does it really need 20? Can we get away with 8 or 10? Oh yeah, I guess it only needs 8. So I reduce the simplicity, and simplicity reduces code, which reduces vulnerabilities. So really the idea here of integrating security is not just increasing the size of the code. Can we optimize and decrease the number of lines of code? There is proven research that as the number of lines of code increase, the number of vulnerabilities increase exponentially. It's not a linear relationship. So if we can work to optimize and reduce the functionality requirements and reduce the number of lines of code, we're inadvertently reducing vulnerabilities and decreasing security flaws in the system.